we're sitting here with Rabbi Lebovitz on March the 14th, 2007, Chov Dalet Adar, Tavshin Samach Zayin. And my name is Yaakov Mueller. I'm interviewing Rabbi Pesach Lebovitz. Rabbi, can you tell me, where were you born?
I was born on on my father's assignment by the Chofetz Chaim to leave Radin and go to America. So oddly enough.
Where were you born, in America?
I was born in Poland, in the hospital in Vilna.
In Vilna.
And where because the doctors wouldn't allow my mother to travel. She was pregnant at that time.
Mm-hmm. What was the assignment that your father had?
His assignment was to be Magzir Lemutav, the Kehila in America.
What year was that?
That was in 1922-23.
And where did your father live at that time?
My father lived in Russia.
And where, in Radin?
He lived in Russia, in Luban. And he studied in Radin and in Mir and in Slabodka and in Kamenitz. And knew the Chofetz Chaim knew him. And apparently my father must have been involved in communal affairs and had some unusual talent. He was tall, I understand, and he spoke well. And made an impact.
So
the Chofetz Chaim wanted him to go to America.
So when you were born, he was actually in America?
No, he was he was married to my mother.
I understand, but he was...
So he would have gone with my mother to America. And my mother became pregnant.
Right.
And the doctors would not allow her to make the trip. So he had to wait until I was born, and he got a shtela in Stalowitz, in Poland, as a rav. I was born in Vilna, with all the top leadership at my bris, and then he went on to America.
You went with your mother to America.
How
old were you when you came to America?
I was a half year old.
Half year old. So, and what was your mother's maiden name?
It's Kustodowicz.
And where was she from?
Luban, Poland.
And her father?
Luban, right. Her father was a sheikhet of Luban.
And he must have been friendly with Yankiv Moshe Kastanovich. Who was from Luban?
He was the sheikhet of Luban, Yankiv Moshe Kustodowicz, correct.
He was also a sheikhet.
My mother's father was that individual.
Oh, he was that. That's how you related to Reb Moshe. Reb Moshe married.
That's how.
Reb Moshe married the daughter, Reb Yankiv Moshe's daughter.
That's how.
Yeah.
Your former Rav,
Rabbi Katz,
was a brother of my mother.
Mm-hmm.
Katz is Kohen Tzedek for Kustodowicz.
Mm-hmm. And so, what year was it that you came to the United States? It was around 1923?
23, 24.
And you were about a half year old.
About that.
What did your father do then when he came to America? It was a rough where?
In East New York.
In East New York. And where did you, when you were a young child, where did you go to yeshiva?
Chaim Berlin. I started.
Elementary.
I started in Herschleberlin at the yeshiva my father organized when he came to America, also in East New York, but dissolved it as soon as he was informed that he could not make determinations for curriculum.
What was the name of the yeshiva?
Herschleberlin.
Herschleberlin. It had no shaykhs with Chaim Berlin.
No, Chaim was then in existence in another part of Brownsville.
Mm-hmm. So then where did you go after that?
I went to Chaim Berlin.
Chaim Berlin Elementary.
Elementary and Torah Das Elementary. And then Torah Das High School on Bedford Avenue.
Mm-hmm. And then Beis Medrash?
base Medrash Bedford Avenue, right through the whole operation in Torah Vadas on Bedford Avenue. From there I went to Tiferes Yerushalayim when my uncle came to America and became the Rosh Yeshiva there.
Mm-hmm. How did your uncle come to America? I remember Rabbi Katz telling me he played a role.
He came to America through the efforts of my mother and the primary connections of her brother, Rabbi Katz, with Senator Taft, who at that time was a very prominent member of the United States Senate, and had the old connections with the embassies to get a visa for my uncle's family, for the family, mm-hmm. the entire family, to come to America. But my grandfather chose not to come.
Rabbi Yankiv Moshe chose not to come, and he died during the war.
Unfortunately, the Germans performed Shechita.
Mm-hmm. And Rabbi Katz, he came from Luban. He was living in Luban. He came to New York. Why did he come?
Anybody who could run away from the pogroms of Russia and Poland would want to come to America.
Mm-hmm.
And he came as a young man to America, and he went to Lebanon Yitzchak.
Right. So then afterwards you learned in Tiferes Yerushalayim.
Correct.
By your uncle, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. And after that,
got married in 1945. After that, but around that time, I made an effort to become the Rav in Lakewood.
You had smicha from, you got smicha
from Moshe Feinstein.
From Moshe Feinstein and
Treasure's line. From Rav from Rav, several Rabbanim in New York,
mm-hmm.
who gave me smicha, and I came to Lakewood to become the Rav in Lakewood.
So, who was the Rav before you, right?
Rabbi Nissen Waxman.
Rabbi Nissen Waxman. So, what year did you come to Lakewood?
1944.
In 1944. So, the yeshiva was already here then?
Started in the Elul of 1943.
So, could you tell me about, you're one of the only, last living people of that tekufa that, from a historical perspective, that were here. Bishasti Yeshiva, you were in New York, you were in Lakewood, you were working to become into Rabbanus in Lakewood. Tell us about the start of the yeshiva, how the yeshiva started, why they came to Lakewood.
I can only share with you what you would call aid me p'aid. I wasn't present in the actual negotiations and experiences that led to the formation of Beis Medrash Gevurah. When I came here, two very prominent balabatim of the shul were directly involved in the formation process of Beis Medrash Gevurah. One was a hotelman called Bezalel Goldstein, who had a kosher hotel in Lakewood for many years and was very much involved with the process of the formation of the yeshiva. Since he had a hotel and catered primarily to Orthodox individuals who sought out a kosher hotel to spend several weeks during the winter season in Lakewood, he was approached by an individual named Rav Bishko to speak to his guests one Shabbos during Mincha. And that Shabbos, I'm relating to you what I was told by the individuals.
And what year are we talking about when this happened?
This happened in 1942.
1942, a year before the yeshiva started.
A year before, 1942.
Right.
Came it was during the winter season.
Right.
He came and spoke at Mincha time and opened up his remarks with the words, Merev Rabbeisai Ibn Agikumen Einladen zu Stimas Agoylel von Teure. Those were his opening words. Well, he surely frightened these committed elderly individuals who were frightened by the remark of Stimas HaGerlil of Torah, the end, which means essentially the end of Torah. And he explained his words, Europe is completely decimated. There's nothing left of Torah in Europe. No yeshivas left. No Talmidim are left. No Russia yeshiva are left. The only place now is America. There wasn't much in Israel. Therefore, he came to suggest that we open a yeshiva in Lakewood. And they asked him, why Lakewood? And he asked it very simple. I did raise funds for the yeshivas in Poland. How did I raise these funds? I would come visit Jewish homes throughout the western part of the United States. And I would ring doorbells and ask the women to give me their pushka, their tzedakah box, from lighting candles. It was customary for women, halacha women, when they would light candles, to put money in a tzedakah box. I would ask them for that money, for Torah. If I was fortunate, if there was the husband was home, I would sometimes get a larger check. This is the source of my money, of how I raised my money. Lakewood at that time had 120 hotels, which were frequented primarily by Jews, of all shades and opinions and practices, but basically Jews, coming to spend some time to rest and relax. So he said, I have the Jews here, thousands of Jews over the course of the winter months from November until Pesach. I'll take them and show them the real thing with boys are sitting and learning Torah. I'll make so many thousands of dollars. So therefore, from my perspective, he said, Lakewood is the best place to start a yeshiva and succeed with a yeshiva.
From a fundraising perspective.
From fundraising. That was his concern. The people there were impressed. And he inspired them to the point, they immediately made a decision, let's go and look for a building. This brought in another individual who was also a very active member of the shul, called Menashe Rabinowitz.
Up till now, you're quoting Bezalel Goldstein.
Correct.
And now Menashe Rabinowitz gets involved.
Menashe Rabinowitz
was a real estate broker in
Correct.
Lakewood.
They called upon him to find a building, a home, which can serve the purpose of housing a yeshiva.
At that point, had he mentioned anything about Rav Aaron Cutler or anything?
No.
It was just, he just said, Menashe Machan Yeshiva.
That name never even came into the picture.
At that point. Right.
Okay. No mention of that name at all, of any relationship with the whole idea. Menashe Rabinowitz was commissioned to go out and find a building. He found a mansion on 6th Street, which was owned and by an elderly Catholic lady who was living in the house. And they came, the building looked very appropriate, and they purchased that building at a reasonable price. And that's how the idea of starting a yeshiva in Lakewood came into motion. They bought the building. They immediately went ahead to put an ad in the then Jewish daily, the Yiddish and Morgen Journal, to announce the opening of a yeshiva for the Elul term of 1942. Unfortunately.
And who was going to be, who did Rabbi Bishko say was going to be?
He would take care of the yeshiva.
He would be saying.
He would function.
And this would be for older Bachram.
Only for older Bachram.
Post-high school Bachram.
Post-high
school Medrash.
Medrash.
And they put an ad in the paper.
Correct. Unfortunately, nobody responded. So the Balabatim met again, and they reached a decision that since that people have no interest in this kind of a yeshiva, to sit and study all day, let's just sell the building and take our money out, and was a good idea. At that point, again, all of this is related to me by Mr. Goldstein and Mr. Rabinowitz. At that point in time, Agudas Arabonim became involved. Another positively thinking Jews who are interested, who are concerned about the future of Torah, and were interested in initiating activities for advanced Torah study in America. And after many, many months of deliberation and seeking out an individual who would head this kind of an institution, they called upon Reb Aaron, who was then in America raising funds for Vad Hatzalah, an agency which was providing, raising funds for the survivors of the Holocaust, primarily yeshiva people and Orthodox committed individuals. After lengthy negotiations, Reb Aaron Zatzal agreed to become the Rosh Yeshiva of this kind of a Meisiv. Amongst the many other conditions was, one, he would only come Friday, deliver a shiur on Shabbos and on Sunday, and go back to New York and continue his fundraising activities for those in need. He felt that it wasn't right for him to start an institution or a yeshiva of learning and take care of his own needs while there were so many tens of thousands of Jews suffering in Europe.
Okay, so in other words, was Rabbi, who was the one who brought Reb Aaron to Lake? Was it Bishop? Was it Rabbi Bishko? Was it the Agudas Arabonim together with Rabbi Bishko?
I don't know.
You don't know.
That was never mentioned to me.
But the Hebrew day school was named after Bezalel Goldstein.
Yes.
When you came to Lakewood in 19, was there already a day school here?
No.
Who started the day school?
I did.
What year was that?
Yours truly. Wait. In 1946.
With the help of Bezalel Goldstein,
yeah,
and
surely,
and the Balabatim of the shul,
they were the Balabatim of the shul of the shul.
And where was the day school located? The first
day in
the
Talmud Torah building,
the Talmud Torah
of the shul,
which was that building that's on 4th Street, which is
4th Street off Monmouth Avenue
today, which was the
Lakewood Hebrew Institute,
right? Lakewood Hebrew.
That was the Talmud Torah building,
which became the funeral parlor, and then now it's a yeshiva is in there right now.
Yeah, I mean it's
right. That was the Talmud Torah.
That was the Talmud Torah building.
I remember Rabbi Shechter, Rabbi Shmuel Shechter,
that's right.
Was the principal.
He was a rebbe
there in the Talmud Torah.
I don't think he was. No, I don't think he was in that building. Uh-huh. From there, the day school moved to 5th Street, where the Auschwitz Fired building was. But when I came here, one of the main reasons, man, I don't know you need that in your interview for that.
Yes, I want to have
one of the main
much
reasons,
historical information as I can.
One of the main reasons for my predecessor to have left Lakewood,
Rabbi Waxman,
to after been here 14 years, was the fact that the Keilah broke into two particular groups. One considered themselves the more modern Orthodox that left him. He was a Talmid of Vemir, and certainly what you would say is followed the straight line, And they started the Jewish Center. Lakewood Jewish Center. A shul? Only a shul. Lakewood Jewish Center. Name meant nothing.
Where was that?
That was on 5th Street and between Madison and Forest.
In other words, where the shul is now, over there, there was a...
No shul, but no. The shul, in the middle of the block. Uh-huh. Middle block, there was a small rooming house.
Uh-huh. That's where they started the Lakewood Jewish Center.
That's where they started.
They have a rav there?
They had a rav. They engaged the rav. They engaged the mashgiach. I mean, you know, they have to fit in things. Why do the communities break into two groups? Who are the groups that broke the community? You had in those years 8 kosher butchers.
In Lakewood.
In Lakewood. That provided the needs of the Jewish community plus the needs of the hotels that claimed to be kosher. And had to at least indicate by some kind of form that they were buying kosher food. Well, and there was a mashgiach appointed by the Rav who headed the Vara Kashrus.
This is Rabbi Waxman's
time. Rabbi Waxman.
Yeah.
Who was a student in Yeshivas HaMen Yitzchak Gochan from Lakewood. He was the son of a very... very prominent family in Lakewood, the Zerinsky family, who were one of the few Shomrei Torah and Mitzvahs in Lakewood at that time. And this young man took on the job of being the mashgiach for the butchers, over the butchers. Well, apparently the butchers did not maintain their side of the responsibility. And there the friction between the Rav and the butchers developed to the point where they refused to use the local shachtim and decided they're going to make a Shabbos Pesach, their own organization, bring in their own shochet and have their own control of kashrus. And started this shul, this Jewish center. Then asked the mashgiach to become the rav. The mashgiach consulted with Rav Waxman, and Rav Waxman reached a decision: yes, take it, because he'd rather have a relationship with someone whom he knew, rather than someone whom he didn't know that would come and make life miserable for him. Unfortunately, it did not plan, didn't work out as he planned. Once you have an organization, friction begins, regardless of what things are, regardless who initiates the friction. And things did not work out, and therefore he made a decision to leave Lakewood.
Rabbi Waxman.
However, the klala of the Gemara, when two Talmidei Chachamim are in a kehila and there is friction between the two Talmidei Chachamim, one unfortunately dies and one is gola.
Mm-hmm.
Rabbi Waxman unfortunately became the traveler, the wanderer. And the other gentleman, a very young man, died as a young man.
What year are you talking about now?
If you want to know the exact date, look on the entrance to the day school.
There's a plaque there. You mean it has?
There's a piece of stone entrance into the day school building.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the front, on the side.
Right.
Which has his name.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the date of his demise.
Mm-hmm.
That's the story of...
So then you came to Lakewood around that time.
I came to Lakewood.
So what
no,
was...
No, no, no. I came way before that.
Mm-hmm.
I came to him when he was the Rav already.
When
Rabbi Zerinsky was the Rav.
Rabbi Zerinsky was the Rav. But Rabbi Waxman had left already.
Rabbi Waxman had left, yes.
And then you took over really his shtetl.
I took over his shtetl.
What was your first, when you came to Lakewood, did you go to Rabbi Aaron was here already about a year. And Rabbi Bishko was still here then? Was
yes.
he there? And he was like the executive director of
correct,
the yeshiva.
Correct.
Did you meet Rabbi Bishko then?
I met Rabbi Bishko then. I certainly came to see Rabbi Aaron.
And what did happen? What was your? Do you remember your first encounter with Rabbi Aaron?
Just my first encounter.
Shalom Aleichem.
Esther Shalom Aleichem, telling him that I became the Rav in Stutt, mm-hmm. gave me a bracha, and asked him if I can attend the shiur. I realized myself that I don't have that much to do here. It's a small community, and I would have enough time on my hands at least to take advantage. To be in his presence and hear his shiur.
You were still a bacher then. When
I was still
came.
A bacher. Yeah. I was in the process of getting married.
Becoming a chassan.
And he certainly was very happy to hear that I would not want to come to the shiur. In mm-hmm. fact, he asked that Nassim to be a chavrusa with me. When I came here and became the Rav, I discovered that a large number of the initial group of Talmidim in the yeshiva were my classmates in Torah V'das.
Mm-hmm. So you knew Shvei, them already? Knew.
Whom I already knew.
Who are you referring to?
I'm referring to Shvei. I'm referring to Weisberg. Mm-hmm. I just can't think of all the names now.
Mm-hmm.
Who were at that time in the yeshiva.
I think there was, I don't know if they were in Torah V'das.
They were in Torah V'das.
They were in Torah V'das, but I'm saying there was Mordechai Yaffe was from the first.
No.
And Usher Katz or Usher Katz.
We're jumping. When Rabbi Aaron decided to come, Rav Mendelovich, who was, this already is my knowledge, Rav Mendelovich, who was the Menahel of Besifta Torah V'das, asked a group of young men to go to Lakewood to extend their studies.
Mm-hmm. When Rabbi Aaron opened up the yeshiva.
When Rabbi Aaron became
some of the Bachrim came from Torah V'das.
Some of the Bachrim was sent here.
By Rav Mendelovich.
Rav Mendelovich to come and be part of the yeshiva.
And that you're saying was Rav El Yishvei.
El Yishvei, Weisberg.
Rabbi Weisberg.
I think Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky. I think Rav Shmuel was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember all the names now. I have to see the list in front of me. It'll refresh my memory. But, and to that number, were at the initial group, one of the influencing arguments to Rav Aaron to come to Lakewood was the fact that he at that time had a yeshiva for his Talmidim whom he saved, whom he brought to America, who were in Kletsk, whom he housed in a building in a loft in White Plains, in that area, or New Rochelle, I don't recall the
White
exact
Plains.
Place,
yeah.
whom he housed there for the purpose of learning the language, learning how to speak English, and eventually getting a job as a teacher in a Mesid. And then, in addition to those, there were a number of young men who studied in Europe, American boys who went to Europe to study. With the war, they all came home, and they wanted to continue their learning. So they came to Rabbi Aaron, to New Rochelle, or to White Plains, to continue learning. That was the initial group, the boys from Torah V'das, the boys, the American boys, who came back from Europe,
mm-hmm.
and his initial Kletzky.
So when in the beginning of the yeshiva, when you came to Lakewood, Rabbi Bishko was still here.
Yes.
He eventually left. How did that He was the fundraiser for the yeshiva.
I mean, from my limited knowledge, Reb Aaron and Rabbi Ishkel just could not come to terms as to working together. And therefore, Rabbi Ishkel had to leave.
So, but Reb Aaron kept up the schedule of just coming like Thursday nights and Fridays for the weekend.
Correct.
And then he went back during the week to work at Varatzola.
Correct. That was at least for the first 5 or 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember when Reb Schneer, Zecheinu Levracha, came?
Sure.
Do you remember when he came?
What
was your relationship with him, I mean, from the beginning?
A closer relationship because the age gap was not that wide.
Mm-hmm.
When Reb Schneer took over, that age, that relationship became stronger. In fact, it was at that time that I had lost my wife. My wife was Nifter, and I had remarried several years later. And Reb Schneer and the Rebbetzin came to our home when we returned after the wedding, to show his garvis between his family and myself, and between the yeshiva and myself. So let me just note a few things aside. During those developing years of the yeshiva, the financial situation was not very good. There was no supporting organization. While there were some prominent, wealthy individuals who were part of the structure of the original board of the yeshiva, the needs to maintain that kind of an institution were tremendous. And months came by when the yeshiva didn't have enough money to pay the electric bill, or to pay for the fuel bill, or other responsibilities or obligations which were immediate. And if that money would not be paid, these services would be curtailed. When that information was brought to my attention, 4 or 5 situations of that nature, we raised the money over Shabbos in the shul, and those bills were paid.
This was in the early years of the yeshiva. From your perspective, can you explain to me who was Reb Aaron Cutler? What was his koyach?
First of all, it's not a matter of humility for myself to be able to speak or even describe that kind of a giant. I was a young man, a student of Kavod Chacham. My years of growth and development focused around the status and the worthiness of the Gdolim who ruled and guided the pattern of Jewish life for us who sought to be committed to Torah mitzvahs. Knowing of the reputation of Rosh Hashiva Zatzal, I was certainly moved by the fact that he would drive with me to and from New York, at which time I would have just the privilege of sitting near him while he was engaged in thoughts of Torah. He refused to allow a conversation between myself and himself. He says, "You are by the wheel, You cannot be Masiach Das in this kind of a situation where life and death is at issue. Therefore, let's understand that we will not talk while you're driving. And so it was along all the many, many times that I would drive her, Baron. There was never a conversation during that trip. So when I brought him, when I picked him up, it was after the shear. I could not talk about the shear. When I brought him back to Lakewood, I would not have any matters to review with him. I wasn't aware of the yeshiva matters. So those trips were actually silent experiences.
Do you remember ever going in and asking him a shiloh about something of the kehillah, something, asking him a shiloh that you could share?
There was one experience which I had with Rosh Yeshiva. Because of conditions that developed in the community, I was faced with a problem pertaining to the shechter. By virtue of another rav and another shul, a new shechet was engaged. After summoning that shechet to a din Torah, and after a psak that the person should cease and desist from continuing his activity, he continued.
In other words, the kehillah, your kehillah, took him to a din Torah.
Correct.
Basically to say that the shchutei chutz.
That he was involved. He was involved in encroaching
on your shachta.
Upon another person's shchutei.
Your
shchutei.
Who was the Bezdin? He went to Bezdin. He went with you to Bezdin.
Yeah, to a Bezdin. That Bezdin at that time was
that Gudas Harabonim?
No. So in Brooklyn. I can't think of it.
But he went to Bezdin.
Went to Bezdin.
Bezdin Paskin.
And Bezdin Paskin,
He should stop shechting in Lakewood.
Sagasgul, correct.
Sagasgul.
He refused to stop because he had a shul. That job, which was in the shul that was in existence.
He was a rav also. He was a rav.
No. I mentioned earlier Rabbi Zerinsky died.
Yeah, right.
His shtetl was taken over by his father-in-law, who was a rav, Rav Grossman.
Mm-hmm.
He became the rav.
Where was Rabbi Grossman before?
In Brooklyn someplace.
And he became the rav in the shul.
Sure.
He was also a sheikh?
No. And he said, I'm the rav here, and my kehillah has a right to engage a sheikh. And that's the way it remained, regardless of the psak of the Bezdin, which he agreed to abide by.
But he didn't abide by it.
No. As a result of that refusal to maintain the proper standard, I had to assert the shechta. The sheikh, who didn't want to abide by the Bezdin. I announced publicly that on this and the Shabbos, I will declare an isur on the sheikh. To forewarn the individual and individuals, the butchers who use that shechet, of what the consequences would be. So I received many, many calls from my family and from friends of the family not to go through with my threat, my decision. Amongst those who requested that I not go through was the Rosh Hashiva Zatzal.
Rebaron Kut.
And I said, my response to the Rosh Hashiva was, if he will join me on the authorization of kashrus for the butchers, then I will abide by his decision. and whatever any other decision he may make regarding the status of the butchers, even in matters of kashrus. I would write down and submit to whatever he would want me to do. No, he said he's not a rav, he's not involved in kol she'inyanim, and therefore he couldn't assume that responsibility. So I said to him, since you cannot assume that responsibility, you can't let me hang in thin air with regard to the kehillah. I must do something for the kehillah and for the shoktim who were then employed by the kehillah. That was my only encounter with the Baron regarding a matter pertaining to the kehillah. The other matter was when the day school who that employed many of the Bachrim and the Yungalite and the wives of the Yungalite who were studying in the yeshiva, who were being underpaid and requested an increase in salary, to which the board, the Balabatim of the day school, responded in the negative. Rav Aaron told them to go on a strike.
Told the teachers to go on a strike.
And I had my differences with Rav Aaron, explaining to him what the difficulties were in raising that money. Nevertheless, he said, there'll be money for everything. It was just like this. And they went on a strike. But that comes into a different picture. So at that time, the opposition to the day school was very, very serious. To the point where there was a motion in the shul, cease and desist or leave town.
I mean, for you.
For me.
In other words, you were involved in fundraising. I remember that you used to...
Correct.
You basically started the day school.
That's right.
And you used to raise money for the day school.
There was
like an independent board.
Board, yeah, but there were lay people.
But the Ralabatim told you that if you're going to still be involved in the day school...
Not Balabatim of the day school.
Right, the Balabatim of the shul.
With the development of the day school, another group of people developed in the community. A group of individuals who were interested in that kind of a chinuch. That's aside. That's about Rav Aaron himself. Rav Aaron represented to me, as I viewed him, Av Teira min Hashemayim. When you spoke to Rav Aaron, you would sense that fire was coming out of his eyes. He spoke with that sense of firmness and sureness that this was what the Torah requires of us. But regardless what the issue on the table was, he had his position and expressed it very strongly and very firmly. Whether it was a local issue of the Jewish community in America, whether it was an issue pertaining to the Kehillah, Jewish people in Israel, or any other part of the world, he was very firm regarding his response and his position. And he gave that impression to me. Rav Aaron Bershiva was a very restless individual. You sensed when you were with him that his whole body was functioning within the circuit of Torah. That his mind is a mind functioning on the circuit of Torah, whatever it may be. Hence, he was the bearer of the Torah. This is how he impressed me.
You mentioned that in 1942, Rabbi Bishko put an ad in the paper. Nobody showed up. Rabbi Aaron comes to Lakewood, and you have all these American boys eventually coming, and the yeshiva grows. How do you explain it from your perspective? You were here then. You witnessed it. You're a firsthand witness to the growth of the yeshiva.
Well, the fact that Rabbi Aaron took on the responsibility to guide and lead a group of men in the study of the mysteries of Torah was the prompting factor that gave young men who were then studying in Torah Vedas, which was the only yeshiva then in existence, besides Yitzhak Elchanan.
What about RJJ?
Was not a yeshiva on that level. The only yeshiva of the level of student that would be eligible to appreciate this kind of analysis of Torah was Torah Vedas. There were small institutions here and there, but not many to talk about. That his presence was the stimulus to bring Bachrim to Lakewood to learn. And they didn't come in droves. By the time, I think it was the 18 years later, I think around that time.
19 years, he was from 43 to 1962.
By the time he was Nifter, the number increased to nearly 200. Not quite. When the yeshiva moved from its home to another building to house the growth, we're talking about a number between 100 and 150 bachurim. So in 19 years, the growth of student body was not that measurable to the person who was conducting the yeshiva. You didn't have the source for that kind of individual. Reb Schneier came in on the foothold of a change in the Jewish community. The day schools that Reb Aaron was responsible to have organized throughout the country was now producing high school students. And these students were now developing into the level of study which was offered by Bais Medrash Gevoeh. And their teachers were alumni of Bais Medrash Gevoeh. Students who were inspired by Reb Aaron to open their own yeshivas, to make room and to provide for those who want to continue learning after elementary school. So you began to develop a source of student body for this type of yeshiva.
And that spurred the growth.
The numbers mushroomed, and that's what you have today.
Did you meet in the beginning years, there were Balabatim, like the Bunims and the Benheims, that you would come to Lakewood?
I knew that I met them all.
In the hotels.
I sat with them at many meetings. Ben Davis, Begunit, Solomon, Shapiro. These were the prominent aristocracy of the Orthodox community in the 40s and the 50s.
And they were, it seems that they were attracted to the Rosh Hashiva. How do you explain that?
All right. Here you have individuals who have adopted for their way of life a commitment to Orthodoxy, to Torah. What they needed was the guide. The guide who can keep them on that path of Torah. And Reb Aaron was the perfect response to their need. They were successful businessmen. The Ben Shalom blessed them with business success. Here came a great leader to show them what they can do with their money. He opened the light for them. And because of their commitment, because of their involvement, in Shmiras HaMitzvos, in the maintenance of Torah, within the general American community, brought them into a sphere of developing Torah as Reb Baron saw it.
You saw Reb Nosson Bachfeigel also during this tekufa.
Yeah.
What was his relationship in the growth of the yeshiva, his relationship with Reb Aaron? How did you perceive the mashgiach?
Well, Reb Nosson was a Eved Lifnei Rabbi. He was a student who manifested a kind of life which would be exemplary to serve as a symbolic element, individual, to personify. He was a humble man. He was a quiet individual. He was a peaceful individual. Never sought conflict or friction. And he conveyed this feeling in his Shmuisen, that the goal of a Ben Torah is to maintain goodwill, to maintain reverence for Torah, to appreciate the fact that being a Ben Torah, you are serving your Maker on the highest level, to the point of maintaining the very existence of the world. And he was an American-born individual whom American young men respected, because he was almost on their level as to the source of his development. And therefore, he had an impact on their thinking and their pursuit.
His father was a Rav in Montreal. Did you ever meet his father? Did he ever come to Lakewood?
His father, I may have met him. I knew his family. I knew his brothers.
Mm-hmm. So, summation, Rabbi, of the whole Lakewood experience, the Reb Aaron, the yeshiva.
It seems that in the design and the plan of the world, the Ribbono Shel Olam had so charted out the last 100 years for a rejuvenation and a renaissance for Torah. Until the turn of the 20th century, it appeared to all that the Torah was at the very end. Observance was reduced to a negligible level. Reverence for Torah was inconsequential. Appreciation of Torah did not exist. The study of Torah was limited for a variety of reasons. So what did Torah possess for its continuity? All the elements needed for that which was the most treasured element of the world were not here, were absent, were non-existent, or about to be extinguished. Suddenly a new light appeared. And that which the naked eye saw changed in appearance. That which seemed to be the end became the beginning. And a new light began to appear on the face of the world, as at the very beginning. Vayir. And the light of Torah once again began to brighten the horizon. And within this frame of reference, Rav Aaron or Shiva played a very, very significant role. Because he initiated the idea, let's start with the young. Imengdiyim, but was his favorite phrase, Imengdiyim ain't Yashu. If you don't have the young, you'll never have the elders. I view the last century as a rebirth of the world. Birth of the world because there was a rebirth of Torah. And I feel grateful to having been part of this new Bria, a real new Bria. I saw it at its very end. When I came to Lakewood, Torah and Yiddishkeit were at their very end. Intermarriage, which still didn't stop, was prevalent. Amaratzis grew more and more. Chinuch was the last thing on anybody's agenda, except for a handful of individuals of who were Yireim Ushleimim, but across the general range of life, we were losing and losing daily and daily parts of Klal Yisrael. Torah didn't have a place anymore, except within fixed hours. And all of a sudden, a new Bria took place. A new development took place. From my perspective, it's a Neis Galui. The Ribono Shel Olam just took the same individuals and turned their heads around, like he did at Har Sinai. Different Kaf Aleihem HaKigigis. different kind of Kaf Aleihem, but it was the exact same thing. I take the liberty of using that example because that's what happened here. Klal Yisrael was not interested in taking it to him. As our Chachamim developed in the Medrash, in the Gemaras, who needs it? How are we going to handle it? Who can carry it? That's how everybody felt in America. It's a new life, a new world, advancement. What do you need it for? And all of a sudden, there was an immediate surge of Anasa v'Nishma. Still growing into the 21st century. Hopefully it'll continue. And to have been part of this growth in a small way, and to have known the G'daylim who were part of this development, of this renaissance, I'm very grateful to the Rebbe Hashem.
Thank you very much, Shkoyach. Rabbi, you were here when Rav Aaron first came and when he started being involved in Torah Mitzvah and Chinuch Atzmoy. Can you give me your perspective on those, his involvement in those organizations and their contribution to the growth of Torah and Yiddishkeit in America and in Eretz Yisrael?
I mean, in every part of the world that still remained with a functioning, living kehila, the Rosh Hashiva played an influential role in the guidance of what this kehila should do. In Eretz Yisrael, he played a dominant role in the development of Chinuch Atzmoy, together with the G'daylim of Eretz Yisrael and the Rosh Yeshiva in the United States, across the board, from Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan to all the yeshivas and on the East Coast, Reb Aaron was the leader in stimulating the growth in Eretz Yisrael and the support for Chinuch Atzmoy, for Israel itself. In America, he and Rav Mendelovich, who was then the Menahel of Masivta Torah V'Das, initiated the formation of Torah Mesorah, an agency to develop yeshivos ketanos for children beginning at the age of 5 to start learning Torah, and eventually high schools, and eventually Batei Medrash, and eventually Kollelim. These were the initial plans which Rav Aaron set forth together with Rav Mendelovich in bringing about this renaissance of Torah of which we speak. There was a plan, there was a direction, and that plan and that direction was placed into fulfillment and to fruition. And so it was. When we look back today over the last 65, 80 years of the development of the Jewish community, we see its growth and development according to plan, step by step. Not losing 1 hour or 1 day. The day schools grew in leaps and bounds all over the country. Lakewood was the smallest population in the country that housed a day school for those children who were in need. At that time, in the 40s, there was no yeshiva of substance. that whose students would have children of the age for a day school or a yeshiva ketana. From that yeshiva ketana and from that day school, they developed high schools. Graduates from the day school went to Philadelphia, went to Baltimore, went to New York, both the boys and the girls who attended the Hebrew Day School or the Yeshiva Ketana or the form of a Beis Yaakov. And from those high schools made a determination to sit and learn a few more years. So today you have graduates of the day school, alumni of the day school of Lakewood, who are Rosh HaYeshiva, some who are Rosh HaYeshiva of Beis Medrash Gevoa. You have Mashgichim, some who are Mashgichim in Beis Medrash Gevoa, all started in this movement of children for the four day schools.
There were many Rabbonim in America, and very few of them started day schools. What, you were the exception, not the rule. What inspired you to start a day school in those early years?
I've fortunately recognized that that's the only answer to any growth and development in Judaism, in Jewish life. I sensed the bankruptcy of the Talmud Torah. There was no spiritual life in that encounter. They may have learned how to read the prayers, the philos. They may have learned how to translate the words, but not Yiras Elokim. That binding factor of Yiras Elokim did not exist in any of these schools, any of these concepts of education.
The Talmud Torahs.
Whatever it is, yeah. in any of these concepts of education. No spiritual life. And that was the main reason for the failure of Judaism at the turn of the century. The Jews of Europe could not influence their children. Although they maintained certain lines of observance, but it was an observance without Yiras Elokim. And because that element was missing, they could not make the sacrifice required in a strange environment.
You're saying that in Europe, even before the Churban, the MS Yiddishkeit was on a downward spiral.
Oh, surely.
There was yeshivas.
A descending level. Definitely.
And there was Beis Yankiv starting with Zora Schneer, but overall, the overall population was, it was more on the
Correct.
Way down than on the
Correct.
Way up.
Absolutely.
So you saw the Renaissance after the Churban. You saw Rav Aaron in the Renaissance and the other Rosh Hashivas and other Gedolim and Hasidic Rebbes that came.
Correct.
That
Correct.
By Hiyar.
Correct.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.